Hey everybody, this is Wake and Flurry Up Films, talk about 10 things I hate about you.
Get the music! I'm Colleen Flaherty.
And I'm Michael Flaherty.
This is Flaherty's on Films, where we talk about the most distinguished and highbrow films because we are fancy people who have cool opinions. Michael, what are we talking about this week?
This week, we're talking about the film 10 Things I Hate About You from 1999. Mm-hmm. Do you want to read the description?
I would love to.
Yeah.
I never get to. I'm so excited.
This will be good.
This is from IMDb. A pretty popular teenager can't go on a date until her ill-tempered older sister does. That is a shit. I hate that. I hate it.
What would you write?
Even though it's literally correct, I hate it.
Yeah, what would you write?
I would say a spoof and a modern incarnation of Shakespeare's A Taming of the Shrew.
That was really good.
Yeah. The 10 Things I Hate About You visits a sweet-ass high school on the lake where we all have fun romantic interludes and snappy repartee.
Mine would have been mostly about the abs of Heath Ledger. Does he take off his shirt?
He does not. I don't know where you're getting the abs.
I just must have imagined it.
I think he had abs like charismically, like his charisma.
That's what I would have said.
Six pack ab.
He had abs in a sense. That would have been the description.
Like
of the
he
film.
Was so hot and charming. You're like, I bet he's chiseled under that tank top.
The 10 things I hear about you, you'll hear some conversational abs. Do you like this film? Have you seen this one before?
I've seen this film many times.
Why?
I owned the bright green VHS. I loved
ew, why
this
was
film.
It bright green? Was it like lime green?
Yeah, it was
why?
Very 90s. Oh. And then there was like, and the letters like in spray paint. It was like so cool.
It was very Nickelodeon, sounds like. The Nickelodeon
sure.
aesthetic.
Nickelodeon, but they do swears, my friend. So
oh,
it's, you know, it's for
teen Nickelodeon, which is what I wanted to have.
And now I'm watching again and I'm like, you know what, it's still great and I still love it, but I have the veil of nostalgia and also every bit of historical context of living in the 90s and absorbing it, so I couldn't be put off by even the flaws of this movie. So have you seen it before?
Yes, because I lived with you as a young'un and I just had no choice but to see it, and I do not care for it.
You should not have watched it when it came out. You were too young.
Too young. That's why I'm all fucked up. Here's what I dislike about the film. Number one, I don't care about any of the relationships.
Are you going to do 10 things? Because I'm going
to
be...
Number two. Let's go on to our next segment. This is called BAM.
Time for Sam. The part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some rad facts. Sam, take it away.
In 1997, two friends, Karen McCullough Lutz and Kristen Smith, decided to write a screenplay inspired by William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, but have it take place in a modern American high school. There would be subtle nods to their inspiration, like their main characters' last names, and even a direct quote of, "I burn, I pine, I perish."
What are their last names?
Stratford.
Stratford.
But that's a Stratford upon Avon thing, I think.
Yeah, so that's where Shakespeare was born.
Oh.
But Patrick
and where he kept his wife and family while he had many, many
I kids. Thought he wasn't a real guy. Like, he might have been a million guys.
No. He was a real guy, but his writings may have been done by a lot.
Yeah, in the way that Jesus was a real guy, technically, right?
Yeah.
I was just going to make that joke.
Beat you to it.
The title of the screenplay, however, has nothing to do with The Taming of the Shrew. According to McCullough Lutz, the title is based on a diary entry I made in high school. I had a boyfriend named Anthony that I was frequently unhappy with. I made a list called Things I Hate About Anthony. When Kristen Smith and I decided to write this, I went through all my high school diaries to bone up on angsty memories, and when I told her about that list, she said, "That's our title." For the record, McCullough Lutz is still good friends with her ex-boyfriend, Anthony, and he is really proud of the fact that the title is about him.
Aw, that's nice.
By the time that they had finished their screenplay, Hollywood was in the middle of a teen flick explosion. Their
Hell
script
yeah.
was quickly purchased and greenlit in just 6 months. And it was the first movie for both of them. They would go on, they're kind of a writing team. They would do like Legally Blonde and Ella Enchanted after this, but this was their first.
Oh, Ella Enchanted was terrible.
What?
Disagree. Remember when he gets slightly cut on his arm so he has to take off his whole shirt?
They sang you a Queen what? Song? Yes. That was good.
Yeah.
It was nonsense.
So director Gil Gungor's agent gave him the script, but he was not interested in doing a typical high school film. His agent insisted, and so he read the script and immediately loved it. It would be his first time directing a film. Later films he would go on to direct would include My Fake Fiancé, Beauty and the Briefcase, and Christmas Cupid.
These are all Lifetime.
They are all Lifetime movies.
Yeah, hell yeah.
This film would have a lot of fresh faces who would quickly become household names. Original ideas for the male lead would include Josh Hartnett and Ashton Kutcher. However, when unknown Australian actor Heath Ledger came into his audition, there was no question. According to Gungor, we can go with, quote, Heath walked in and I thought to myself, if this guy can read, I'm going to cast him. There was an energy to him, a sexuality that was palpable. Heath would later say he was convinced he had bombed the audition as it was over so quickly. However, unbeknownst to him, according to Gungor, quote, the instant the door closed, I turned to the women in the room and said, ladies, I would never sleep with a man, but if I were to sleep with a man, that would be the man. Cast him immediately.
That's a great quote.
This would be Heath Ledger's first American film.
Just like, no homo, no homo, no homo, but he's handsome.
Like, everyone wants to do him, right?
But not me, because I'm a straight man.
Although the studio really wanted Katie Holmes or Kate Hudson for the lead, during auditions it became very clear that Ledger had amazing chemistry with then-unknown Julia Stiles. So,
but then they couldn't do that Dawson's Creek quote. Kate was there.
Yes, Kate had just gotten the role for Dawson's Creek, and Kate Hudson's mom, Goldie Hawn, didn't want her to do the film.
So. Goldie Hawn is her mom?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. They don't look anything alike.
They look very much alike.
Goldie Hawn and Katie Holmes?
No, Kate Hudson.
Oh my God. So sorry. I was not paying attention. I did know that about Kate Hudson.
Katie Holmes was doing Dawson's Creek. Kate Hudson's mom didn't.
I'm there. I'm with you.
Okay, sorry. So for filming, they found a ridiculous school called Stadium High School. And they filmed all of the film there and then in local houses. So there's actually no sets in this film. The entire film was shot on real locations.
One of my favorite one-star reviews that I did not include was this guy literally gave it one star because he's like, they make it seem like in Seattle, but it's in Tacoma. And they didn't even say Tacoma. Not one time did they say Tacoma.
Harsh.
That is a harsh review.
That was harsh. I was like, I don't think they even said Seattle. I think they just sort of implied it's in Seattle by showing the Seattle scape.
I was just going to say, it starts off with the Seattle scape. Mm-hmm. Although it might seem like a dangerous situation to bring together a bunch of teenagers for filming during the summer, a lot of drama, you know, according to the actors, they were all instant best friends. David Krumholtz, who plays Michael, would say, quote, Joseph Gordon-Levitt turned me on to Fish, and I turned him on to Wu-Tang Clan. Gabrielle Union had us in stitches. Julia Stiles brought her own brand of Soho-bred artistic intelligentsia?
Is that what you're trying
to say? Yeah, something like that. Larissa Olnick's laughter filled the room, and we marveled at the tonedness of Andrew Keegan's muscles. Ledger was actually the last to show up, and although there were some concerns because the group was working so well together that adding another hot guy like might be an issue, quote,
never an issue.
This was the concern that was remedied a few days later when he arrived, and we found yet another comrade in sensibility. The group with Heath only got stronger. Before I knew it, the cast was experiencing what I have since found to be all too rare, a unified chemistry throughout the ensemble, without a single bad apple in the bunch. We all agreed that we were having the best summer of our lives.
Aw, how nice.
Very nice.
The group was such good buddies that when Andrew Keegan admitted to Krumhoffs that he didn't know how to draw a penis, Krumhoffs actually taught him how to draw a proper dick on his own face.
All right.
Yeah.
Yucky.
There is also a lot of fun during the scenes, according to the director, for one of the greatest scenes ever. Quote, I said to Heath, just run around the steps with the guards when the guards start to chase you. Right after the first take, the nurse on the set had to run up to one of the guards. They were fearful he might have pushed himself almost to a heart attack. Heath was running with such joy that it physically exhausted the guards.
Aww. Wow.
And although not well known at the time, the actors in the film would demonstrate their amazing talents that would define their successful careers. The famous 10 Things poem was done in one take, with Kat's tears coming unrehearsed. According to Stiles, quote, on some level, I knew that I was supposed to be somewhat emotional, because when we did the table read, I remember I just said the poem, and I could have been reciting the phone book. But I never expected that I was going to start crying. I don't know why I did, whether it was connecting to something going on at the time or just being overwhelmed by the whole experience of making my first big movie.
Wow. Wow.
Another truly memorable part of the movie is the incredible music, including
yes.
that of the band, Letters to Cleo. The director wanted to end the film with a really cool shot of the band on top of the school's roof. He went to the studio, who immediately said no, it was too expensive and not worthwhile. However, when asked by his crew if they got the okay to shoot it, he said yes. So, they went and rented a helicopter. And according to the lead singer of Letters to Cleo, quote, so they told us this is a helicopter shoot. It costs $500,000 every time the helicopter has to take off, so don't fuck this up. As we started playing, we saw the helicopter appear off in the distance. It's hard to see how far it was at first because we were so high in the air, and then all of a sudden the helicopter does this dive bomb directly towards us. Is the helicopter out of control? Is it supposed to be coming at us like this? And I'm thinking, don't fuck up. Keep singing the song, don't fuck up. It costs 500 grand every time. It was unbelievably scary, but it turned out to be an amazing shot.
That was a cool shot.
It was a really cool shot.
Very cool shot.
So 10 Things I Hate About You would premiere on March 31st, 1999. During its first weekend, it would gross $8 million, coming in second behind The Matrix. With a budget of $16 million, the film would find moderate success by earning $38 million at the box office. Now, I wasn't here last week, but I did hear Michael mocking this choice because he didn't think it won any awards besides maybe a Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award.
Which, like, hey, that's an award.
Well, joke's on you, Michael, because it wasn't even nominated for any Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award.
Man, that
was a good bit, Sam. You got
up.
Us there.
It was nominated at the first ever Teen Choice Awards.
All right.
Wait, that's what I said. Nickelodeon Teen Choice Awards.
No. Nickelodeon's is Kids' Choice Awards.
Oh.
Teen Choice Awards is Fox.
Oh, is
oh
that...
I thought it was Nickelodeon Teen
Nope,
Choice Awards.
I had to Google this.
I'm remembering that wrong.
And the Teen Choice Awards, this is literally the first year of it.
Oh.
So, Damn. Your question of the week. How many Teen Choice Awards was 10 Things I Hate About You nominated for?
Four.
Seven.
It was nominated for 7.
Yes! I knew that. I mean.
Yeah, it was nominated for Choice Movie, Choice Breakout
Choice.
Star. It's what they're called. I can't control it.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Go on.
Choice Breakout Star for Julia Stiles. Choice Movie Comedy. Choice Movie Funniest Scene. Choice Movie Love Scene.
They should do the Oscars like this. I love it.
Choice Movie Hissy Fit.
Love it. Love it.
Choice Movie Villain and Choice Movie Soundtrack.
Wait, who's
the villain? Win.
Who cares about art direction? Fuck that. I want Hissy Fit Oscar. This is so much better.
The villain was Andrew Keegan.
Oh,
and it would win none of these.
Oh.
Oh. What swept the Teen Choice Awards?
What was Choice?
Well,
what was the choicest movie?
A lot of them were swept by There's Something About Mary.
Ugh, that movie sucks.
Maybe. Well, teens are dumb, man.
Yeah, also big out there. Matrix. Cruel Intentions. James Vanderbeek won for Choice Movie Breakout.
But, yeah. Oh, they do music, too. Wow. She's All That.
Yeah.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh, it's not just that. They also have Choice Female Athlete and then Choice Female Extreme Athlete.
Wow, good that they separate those out.
Yeah, I don't really know
what you did last summer. Cruel Intentions, one for drama movie. There's Something About Mary.
Can we also talk about the fact that they have
Matrix
displaying...
win no Teen Choice Awards?
Was the Matrix out in 1999?
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's out the same year.
Then no, Michael.
Damn.
I do not see the Matrix on.
Once again, neglected.
Yeah.
I think the most offensive is that they have just flat out Choice Male Hottie. Like, that's a category. You don't have to have a movie. It's just the hottie.
That's my favorite.
I think it's, yeah, because Star Wars Episode One is nominated in a choice, but not The Matrix.
Wait, who won for a male hottie?
Yeah, who won?
Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Ew.
But here are your options. Ben Affleck, David Baranis, Matt Damon.
David Baranis? Yeah.
Well, Angel was a thing.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know who that is. Oh, Dave Boreanaz.
Yeah, that guy.
You said his name really weird.
We all said it wrong. Sorry. Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio, Jordan Knight.
He's the winner.
Ricky Martin and Will Smith.
I don't know what Ricky Martin looks like.
Ricky Martin, he was hot.
I'm sure he's still hot.
Oh, I just mean in 1999. Like, and I was really into Leonardo DiCaprio at the time. I would have voted for him. Freddie Prinze Jr.'s got that weird bug eye thing.
As a former teen, that's what I would have done.
Do you guys want to know what the Choice Love song was that year?
Yes, please.
I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith.
All right, teens, you're good in my book.
And my final fact for you guys today is that in 2012, the director decided to write a sequel called 10 Things I Hate About Life.
Oh.
And it would star Evan Rachel Wood, Thomas McDonald, and Billy Campbell. It would actually be somewhat filmed. They have a movie poster and everything, but mid-production, due to conflicting things, it was canceled, and they kept saying, we'll start filming again, and they just never did. So,
was this before or after the TV show?
It was, I think, after. Okay. The TV show I didn't even bring up because it was, like, canceled after a season.
Okay, gotcha. And that was...
Bam!
Time for Sam. Ha, you did the button again. I don't know why I'm... Anyway.
Yeah,
let's go to our next segment, Critics Corner.
What is this segment about?
I'm so glad you asked. This is where we see what the critics, the creme de la creme, the intelligentsia, as Sam would say, have to say about the film. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about you. I will start. A movie that looks outward, that leads you elsewhere, out of self, toward literature and life, says Stephen Hunter of Time Magazine.
That leads you elsewhere. That's bullshit. That's what they write in all their reviews. That's my guess. All right, so this one's by Writer Girl. This is an Amazon reviewer. I have to admit, I've only watched 15 minutes of it, but I'm already bored, so they must have watched 15 minutes and instantly wrote the review, huh? All right, but I'm already bored and tired of hearing swear words. The guidance counselor is writing porn. The teachers say things like bitch slapped, and the characters are so stereotyped. I get it. It's supposed to be funny, but somehow it just isn't. Moody angsty girl wants to read Sylvia Plath instead of Hemingway. Nerdy new kid wants the popular girl. Popular girl is a ditz who loves her purse more than her shoes. It's just so unbelievable and not in a funny way. It's just so boring. Sorry, don't think I'll finish this one. Can't seem to laugh at the humor or care about the characters. I kind of agree. But I mean, besides, I don't care about swearing, but I kind of agree with that review.
Wow. Okay. 10 Things is a bright little romantic comedy, nicely and sharply written, which wears its learning winningly and lightly, says Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian, in what I think is a pretty condescending review.
We always hear from Peter Bradshaw, I feel like. Is he like a cool guy?
I usually like to use people from outlets that I've heard of. So I do use some of the same ones over. But he is a very famous movie reviewer. and writer on his own right.
This next one's by a customer who's an Amazon reviewer. This the movie is just a vehicle for Heath Ledger to do a hokey, unrealistic singing dancing routine on stadium bleachers. Skip it.
I'm okay with that. That it was, if it was just a vehicle for that. This is from Andrew Grutadero of The Ringer. It's absolutely magical, much like Heath Ledger's face.
That's in the real review?
That's a real review.
That's a real review. Okay.
By the way, the next one, I need you to like walk me through it because I had no idea what was happening in this review.
I speak Amazon, so I could probably do it. This is by Epsilon Delta, Amazon reviewer, one of the classics. This movie is only useful because I can understand my new programmer's coworkers better. Just taking a pause here. All right. Being right out of school, their behavior is more like, did you say hi to me? Do I know you? What is in it for me? Not caring about the things they create. So I am lost so far. But okay. Maybe I'll find my way as we continue this. Instead of hoping for the changing of the world for the better, it is more like gain the max advantage for himself or herself. Hold on to the power as much as possible. Be as selfish as possible. And bully if they can just for fun, or bully first so that they don't get bullied. All right, we have one more sentence, so let's see, because I am I'm looking for my map right now. At times, you can find yourself liking the movie if your IQ is 70. Is that high?
No, I think it's very low.
If your IQ is 70. At times, you can sink it to 50. A total disappointment.
What so, were you reading there?
So, that lost me. So, he wants to understand his programmer's coworkers better.
You're a programmer, so I thought you might get it.
And I have programmer's coworkers, but I just... Yeah, I mean, I feel like I understand it. Well, I've seen this film before, you know, as a youngin'. So, that's why I just understand my programmer's coworkers. All right.
So, that was Critics Corner. Let's go to our favorite and least favorite part. Michael, what was your least favorite part of this film you don't really care for anyway?
Probably the main character. I mean, I feel like everybody likes Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like maybe, I don't know, if you technically call Joseph Gordon-Levitt and the girl the main characters, because they're kind of the plot movers. But maybe not. I don't know. But they're just so boring. And I even wondered when watching...
You mean Cameron and the other one and Bianca?
I mean the main couple, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and the girl and the sister. Yeah. It made me wonder, is Joseph Gordon-Levitt even good?
I know he was very embarrassed about this movie in a totally douchey way.
Yeah, maybe he's not good.
He's good at a thing.
What thing is he good at?
You know, kind of like the nerdy, awkward, aw shucks, mediocre white guy thing.
But is that good?
Wait, can I break in here, Colleen? Yeah. You think he was embarrassed about this movie? Because in an interview for this movie on The Daily Show, he said it was better than Citizen Kane in a non-ironic way.
I just read a New York Times roundtable where he said, and apparently he had been quoted saying this quite recently, that he was embarrassed about this movie, but he said it's for douchey reasons. Like, he admitted, he's like, oh, I just wanted to make important films, then I was offered this, and I guess I just had to do it. But then he enjoyed his time on it, so it's fine.
I feel like I've seen a lot of Joseph in my life, but like, what is he good at?
Oh, I've never seen him in a film and thought, wow.
I feel like he was probably good at Angels in the Outfield, right? He was in that one.
Oh, he's so cute in that.
Yeah, he's cute, but that's all he's got.
I really liked 500 Days of Summer because I feel like that's an extension of this character where it's like he sees himself as the romantic lead, but he's actually just a douchebag.
Yeah, so he can just play that well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that relationship, but I feel like is a lot of the movie, and I just don't care about it at all. They completely lack interest, or for me to care at all.
Yeah, I have a weird opinion about this movie that you may agree or disagree with. That I think it's a bit ahead.
I feel an antagonistic today, so I'll probably disagree.
Yes. No. So I actually think that this movie does a lot of feminist stuff pretty well, especially for a late '90s teen movie. Except for Cameron's character. Cameron's character is absolutely the trope of, if you put enough nice coins in, you should get the sex from the pretty girl, right?
Never heard a phrase like that. It's funny.
I'm sure I stole that. I did not
Just like the idea of the coins, like Chuck E. Cheese.
Just like the nice coins. And then you get the sex from the sex vending machine.
And the lights gonna buzz and you go, bring, bring, bring.
What kind of vending machines do you go to?
I don't know. This is what happened to my mind.
So that was probably my least favorite, but I got to tell you what my real least favorite thing is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to apologize because I am trying to not be a nitpicker about movies. You know, we've done this podcast a long time and it's like, you know what?
Nitpick. Who cares?
The little details don't really matter if the movie is good enough, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But here's what fucking happened, Michael.
Yeah.
Here's what they fucking say to me in this movie. So Larissa Bindle, who plays Bianca, goes into a drawer of panties and pulls out full-bottomed black underwear.
Yeah.
And she says to Cameron, black panties. What's that? Means she wants to have sex someday. That's what. And then Cameron wisely says, maybe she just likes the color black. Yes, Cameron. She does wear a lot of black. And here's what Larissa says to my face.
Yeah.
To my face. Cameron, a girl doesn't have black underwear if she doesn't want someone to see it. And I'm like, here's what that is. I think that is a really good example of the patriarchy, because there's no way that was the original line. So I'm sure the original line was something racier. And then nobody on set, not enough women in power on set, were like, this is the dumbest fucking line ever.
Yeah.
First of all, every teenager in the 90s got all their underwear in Hanes packs from Target or the discount bin from Victoria's Secret. Every woman. That's it. That's the only place to get your underwear.
Plus, if you wanted someone to see your underwear, you'd have like a joke on it. You know, like a Garfield comic.
Exactly, Michael. Exactly. It's just like she had the most basic underwear that you would just buy without thinking. It was the dumbest line. And it was like a joke. And I'm still angry about it years later. As a 13-year-old, I watched this. I'm like, well, that's not right. I don't think, because I think I have black underwear, because like that's a fine color for underwear. And now as a 33-year-old, I'm like, fucking dumb. I don't like that line.
Yeah.
So maybe it's meta commentary. You know what? I think Michelle wants to say something about the black underwear.
I so do. I watched it. I was like, that is the dumbest thing. First of all, as you correctly pointed out, full bottomed.
Right.
During the 90s, thongs were a thing. Thongs right. were a big thing.
You would show them off with your low rise jeans.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't because I was not cool, but other hot ladies did.
There was actually, I think this was early aughts, but there was a term for showing off your thong. It was called a whale tail. Little history for you. So there's that. And second of all, who cares? 95% of humans will have sex sometime in their life. Everybody does it. It's like pooping.
But it's just like, okay, to me, if you're a teenage girl, the line would have made sense. Like, oh, she has matching underwear, so she wants someone to see it. Like, probably not true, but sure. Like, that line makes more sense to me than basic full-bottomed underwear. Right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, she has lacy underwear, which even that's silly because, again, the Victoria's Secret discount bin, which I just discussed.
Right.
So you just have that stuff.
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure it was any other type of underwear and they're like, oh, too racy.
Right. Or,
although
yeah,
maybe
sure
not. I mean, still the guidance counselor still writes porn.
Right. That's what's so weird. But I know the censors are super weird about lady stuff. So, yeah. But they're like, no, if you say lacy thong, that's too much. But penis jokes are great.
Yeah. The original script had it, a bottom, which to put it in here. I was like, that was too much.
Anyway, Michael, what was your favorite?
Is red racier than black? I was just thinking, like, why do they go with black underwear? Maybe it was red underwear because at least that would have been tonally different from her entire wardrobe.
Red's definitely more suggestive, I think.
I would say so. Thank you, Michelle, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael, what was your favorite part of this movie?
Probably the guidance counselor writing porn. Because it's just like so... Because to me, I don't like this one because it's just so bland. And just so like, all right, I get it. But that, it was like a surprise. I'm like, I'm surprised that they went there.
Right. Played by... Oh,
Allison Janney.
Allison Janney. the same year that West Wing started. So it was before she got her like super awesome cred. But she's also just amazing and I love everything she does.
Yeah, is she good?
Yes. Thank you for asking.
You're
she's amazing.
Welcome.
She's incredible. So your favorite part was Alice and Janney's thing?
Probably. I don't really like any other bits of the film. Oh, I liked Kyle Cease. He's like he plays like a nerd. And yeah. There's a scene where a
Bogey
party...
Bogey Boynstein is who he plays.
Yeah, he's a funny comedian, and there's a scene where they all break into his mansion, and he's just a funny guy.
Well, the funniest thing is, I remember watching this as a kid, and I'm like, oh, it's so dumb how they just put a bunch of super old adults and try to pretend they're teenagers to us. And, like, the only older person on set is Gabrielle Union. Like, she was 27. Everyone else was actually in their early 20s or teens.
Who?
So I was wrong, and Kyle Cease just looks old.
Yeah, he does. Who's Gabrielle Union?
The black friend.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, you know what else I enjoyed? I enjoyed watching snippets of Not Another Teen Movie after watching this movie. Specifically, the scene where the popular girl goes to the nerdy girl and at the party spills a bottle of water down her shirt, and you hear the audience go, "Whoa, that's gonna stain." That's very funny.
That can't be your favorite part of 10 Things I Hate About You.
I don't like the film that much. It's not
I
good to
really
me.
I like this film.
I don't like
so
the
you're my
joke.
Favorite part.
Do you like the jokes?
Yes. All so right. You're my favorite parts. Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger. I just watching him again, he's so charming. His presence on screen, like I get why you're in love with him. You know, I was so in love with him and still am in love with him that I have to remind myself as a 33-year-old grown-ass adult who's too woke for her own good, that it's actually not okay that he manipulated her to get money for a date. I just can't, like,
yeah, but
it's hard for me.
He felt bad. He bought
he
her
felt
guitar.
Bad about it. And he's so charming. And I'm like, I don't think I care. This is bad. I wrote actually a great case, which I'm wondering what that means. I also love Julia Stiles' character as a young person. Now, Michael and I were kind of talking about whether her like militant feminism is a butt of a joke or if it's like awesome. And I think it's awesome. I read all the books she read. I thought she was so cool. And it was just nice to see someone who's like pretty much unapologetically a bitch. And she doesn't really change that about herself throughout
That's
the movie.
That's true. That's true.
And I really like that. And I do think the feminism in this movie is pretty good. So I agree with you that Bianca's pretty boring, but like most teen movies, you have like the sexy, pretty one who's super shallow. And she is at the beginning, but then she actually is a person, right? I mean, it's dumb that she just cuts with Joseph Gordon-Levitt because she's like, oh, you've earned this. But
are you making the case for Bianca now?
Yeah, I am.
Oh.
I'm making my case that I feel like she's written through a nice feminist point of view. Where it's like,
oh, I don't care about that. I just don't think she's interesting.
Well, right. I'm saying my favorite thing is like all these years on, I think this movie does a pretty good job of pop culture feminism.
All right.
I think that cat is so awesome. I love her so much.
Cool.
So those are my favorite things.
Those are good.
Also
things.
The soundtrack.
I do not like the soundtrack personally.
You don't like Letters to Cleo?
What? Sing a song of theirs.
Well, I would just sing songs from this, but...
Yeah, do it.
No, I'm not going to sing.
Sing. Sing right now.
Well,
what song?
I'm pretty sure I Want You to Want Me is not their song.
I want you to want me. See, you could do it.
I think they did the best cover ever.
What? Which one did they do?
That song.
I don't know what song you're talking about.
Shut up.
All right.
You're doing a bit. I know you are.
Yeah. All right.
Cruel to Be Kind is also the other song they did.
How's that go?
Cruel to Be Kind in the Right Measure. Anyway.
Sounds like a hip song.
It's very hip. Let us go through the movie. Michael, here's what we're going to do. I just did the Wikipedia thing.
Okay.
So why don't you just read it and I'll just interject.
The whole thing?
The whole thing.
All right. Here we go. Here we go with the plot summary of 10 Things I Hate About You. Cameron James, a new student at Padula High School in Seattle.
Padua.
At Padua.
I can't believe that's a real public school. It's just a fucking castle on the lake. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. What was it originally? Do we have the history?
We don't have
it. It was a hotel.
It was a hotel.
It looks like a fucking castle.
It must have been.
It was It was built in the 1800s, and then in the beginning of the 1900s, like very early on, there was a huge fire that completely destroyed it all. And then they rebuilt it, gave it to the city, and the city turned it into a school. Now it gets its name because they built that gigantic stadium that itself is a big thing.
Dude, so. It's crazy because the stadium overlooks the ocean, and you're like, that's fake. Like, it's too beautiful.
At Padua High School in the Seattle area becomes instantly smitten with popular sophomore Bianca Stratford.
He's like, I pine, I burn, I perish.
Yeah, and right. You're like, who cares? Geeky Michael Ekman warns him that Bianca is vapid and conceited, and that her overprotective father does not allow Bianca or her older sister, the shrewdish cat, to date. All I'll say is her character, Bianca's character, is kind of like the Clueless girl. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But I would much rather watch Clueless than this movie.
I want to say that talking about what you were talking about, how like you really liked Allison Janney, I just think the whole cast is pretty good because I like... the evil hot guy. He's like a guy who's he's like so built and has beautiful hair, but he's like so douchey looking. You can't be attracted to him. It's just like the most amazing casting.
But he's actually a good actor. Like I thought his actual acting was good.
Yeah. And then like, he delivered didn't do anything.
Funny lines very well. That's really sad.
Very sad.
Okay. To date, they don't allow the daughters to date. Kat, a senior, is accepted to Sarah Lawrence College in New York. But her father, Walter, wants her to stay close to home.
Can I say the douchey way that Kat uses like too big a vocabulary, I thought was so cool when I was a kid, which says a lot about me.
You're kind of douchey.
I'm kind of douchey. When he goes, Sarah Lawrence, it's on the other coast. And she goes, thus the basis of its appeal. What a douchey way to say that.
Yeah, we were all teens once.
What are you on, Planet Loser? As opposed to Planet, look at me. That's also a line from that scene.
I mean, I hate to say this, but your behavior did not sound very choice. Bianca wishes to date affluent senior Joey Donner, but Walter, who is the dad, an obstetrician, what's that?
Lady doctor.
An OBGYN?
Yep.
Oh, an OBGYN worrisome of teenage pregnancy will not allow his daughters to date until they graduate.
I also like the dad.
Yeah, I like that actor. I don't like the character, but I thought the actor was very good. Frustrated by Bianca's insistence and Kat's rebelliousness, Walter declares that Bianca may date only when Kat does, knowing that Kat's antisocial attitude makes this pretty unlikely.
Nice.
I can
go through this real quick. Right. I'll do the next paragraph. So Cameron decides to pose as a French tutor. So he asks her out and she's like, oh, you know, Carl, Cameron. Oh, cause you know, she's manipulating him cause she's beautiful. And she's
right,
like,
so shallow.
Actually,
he's just as shallow. Did they ever make that point?
What?
Did they ever make that point that Cameron is basically just as shallow?
They should have. Right?
When I make my teen movie, that's what it'll be. That'll be the point that they're both shallow. That'll be called that. They're
maybe
both.
That's why they're good for each other.
Exactly. Well, no, they're not going to end up together. They're all going to suffer.
I mean, none of them are going to end up together because that's how teenagers work. Anyway.
Exactly.
So she's like, yeah, we need to find some date. And Cameron's like, all right, let's find somebody. And they do this very 90s quick cut thing where they interview a bunch of guys. And then.
Well, the humor of all those quick cuts was especially 90s.
It's very. Yeah. So they decide to select bad boy Patrick Verona, who they've heard a lot of stuff with, like that he spent a year in prison and that he ate a whole duck.
Wait a minute. His name is Patrick Verona?
Yeah.
What a cool name.
Yeah, I think that's the Shakespeare shit.
Oh, thing. I didn't know that. That's so Verona cool.
Thing. Yeah, it's very cool. They say his name a lot.
Well, what am I going to listen?
So Michael decides they're going to trick Joey into paying Patrick to date Kat because like Joey's got a lot of money because he's a model, which I felt like they were a little emasculating about in like a very douchey way.
Yeah,
like, oh, he's a model. It's like, yeah, man,
that's fine. Yeah, he's hot.
Yeah,
he's a hot teen.
So Patrick agrees to be paid to take her. He's like, oh, you're gonna pay me to take on some chick? I'm super hot. This is gonna go great. It doesn't go great, Michael. Doesn't go great. There's a fun scene where he tries to hit on her in a music shop. And then Joey pulls up behind her and she reversed into his car. He's like,
and you really connected with that scene as a youth.
Well, I was like, I wish I was that kind of person, but I would never do that.
Yeah.
Cameron decides to team up with Bianca, and they're going to find out the dislikes and likes that Kat has, which is Thai food, angry girl music of the indie rock persuasion, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, he's getting there,
Verona.
You know?
Yeah.
Patrick Verona, he goes to a concert she's at. He stops smoking because she doesn't like it. They do a funny bit where they're like, oh, she likes pretty guys because she had a picture of Jared Leto in her drawer. And was like, oh, it's fun because they're both jokers. Isn't that cool?
That's very funny.
That's very funny.
We had a conversation that I was like, I feel like Kat would be into smokers. But you made a good point where she's probably into environmentalism. So she probably would not like that. So that's realistic.
Very realistic. And then, so at one point, Bianca and her friend are going to sneak out to a party, and they get Kat to go with, even though she says, Bogey Lowenstein's party, it's just an excuse to distract, for teenagers to distract themselves from their meaningless consumer-driven lives. So I don't know what's your problem with this dialogue. It's amazing.
I don't know. It just doesn't do anything for me.
I have actually complained on this podcast before that this movie is one of the worst for this weird teenage movie trope where people show up to a party and they bring all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone just brings a bunch of sound systems and booze. And then there's like a guy with a tray of tequila shots. Like, man,
well,
even when I was in college, you bogart your stuff.
Well, I think the joke was get it because they're at this loser's house who obviously didn't prepare for the party. So if they did all that for no reason...
On the flyer, so Michael is getting revenge on his nerd friend by having the party, and he has the flyer that he passes out, and it says free beer all over.
Oh, well, then you're right. Too unrealistic. Too many holes.
Too unrealistic.
At the party, Kat becomes upset when she sees Bianca with Joey. Wait, what? Kat sees... Yeah. Okay. And responds...
Joey, eat me, Donner.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and responds by getting drunk. Patrick Verona attends to her, and Kat starts to open up, expressing her interest in starting a band.
Also, when she danced on the table to Biggie Smalls, that's how Julia Stiles got the job for Save the Last Dance, because she is a classically trained ballet dancer, and they're like, oh, but she can get down to Biggie as well. Good job.
However, when she tries to kiss him, Patrick Verona pulls away, and Kat leaves, infuriated. Meanwhile, Bianca ignores Cameron in favor of Joey, leaving Cameron, who we don't care about, dejected. Bianca,
so sad.
Who we also don't care about, soon realizes, however, that Joey, who's hot, is shallow and self-absorbed.
I remember Michael really liking that scene where Joey's like showing her his different modeling poses.
He's a funny
he's
guy,
like,
yeah.
Here's my tube sock. And he looks left. All right. See the difference?
I should have said he was my favorite part because he was really good.
So Bianca asked Cameron for a ride home.
And asked Cameron for a ride home. Cameron admits his feelings for her, which we don't care about, and is frustrated with how she has treated him, which you don't care about. Bianca responds by kissing him, which we don't really care about. Go ahead.
And then another pretty weird line in the movie is when Cameron goes, she kissed me, and Patrick goes, where? And he goes, in the car.
And he's like, oh.
Yeah, and they're like, what a nerd. And I'm like, what is the answer supposed to be, my dick? Like, what? What a nonsense line reading. I didn't get that at all.
He should have said, on my beautiful lips. And he'd be like, nice.
So Joey offers Patrick a ton of money to take Kat to the prom, so he can take Bianca to the prom. But Patrick, he's having second thoughts about this,
because he's actually a good guy.
Because he likes her.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah. So Kat's still mad at Patrick because, like, he rejected the kiss. That's a great scene when he stalks her at the bookstore. And he's like, I've lost my copy of The Femme Mystique. Is it around here? And she's like, oh, she's mad. And he's like, oh, someone has her panties in a twist. And she's like, don't you think for a second that you had any effect on my panties? And then she throws a copy of The Femme Mystique in his face. And I'm like, that is so cool.
Damn.
That's such a cool thing to do.
Damn. Nice. Ha ha.
So cool. But then, Michael, what does he do?
What does he do?
He sings a song. in the bleachers, and it's cute.
Yeah, it's kind of cute how he does it.
Yeah, and then she helps him sneak out of detention by flashing a guy, which is whatever. And then they go on this cute date where they're paddleboarding and a pretty sexy paintball situation. They're just so in love, man. Their chemistry is great.
They do have good chemistry. I'll give the movie credit.
Anyway, everyone's going to prom at the end. So, oh, wait. Back up. That at one point, Kat goes to Bianca and she's like, you know what? Here's why I'm so like mad about Joey. So I used to be like super popular and whatever. And then mom left and I had sex with Joey. Even he pressured me into it. And then he just told everyone he didn't tell anyone. And it was just awful. I didn't want to do it anymore. So he dumped me. And that's when I'm like, and that's when I decided I'm not going to do anything for anyone else anymore. I'm going to live my own life. And Bianca's like, fuck you for not telling me any of this and just bullying me and siding with dad about this. You know, like I'm a person who can make my own choices, which seems like an interesting character trait, Michael.
Nope, not interesting.
Not interesting. Anyway, they all go to prom together and Bianca's wearing this ridiculous belly shirt thing. And her dad's like, what's that? She's like, a prom dress, obviously. I'm like, what fucking prom dress is that?
Silly. It's unrealistic. Silly. Second plot hole.
So anyway, we're all at the prom where some weird ass blocking goes on. Michael, tell us what happens.
All is going well at the prom until Bianca learns that Joey planned to have sex with her that night. Angry that Bianca has spurned her for Cameron, Joey reveals his arrangement with Patrick Verona, which causes Patrick to leave heartbroken. Joey then punches Cameron, but is in turn beaten up by Bianca for having hurt her, Kat, and Cameron. Bianca and Cameron share another kiss.
So you think it was cool when she punched that guy in the face?
You know, it's feminism. It's good, you know.
Yeah. Feminism. That prom scene is just so weirdly blocked, just the way people move around for their scenes. And then Joey comes in and he like says, I didn't pay you to take out Kat. So, and we're like, all right.
This is the premise. Oh, I fucking messed up that joke.
Try again.
This is the premise of the movie. Still not that funny.
Yeah, Heath Ledger has to say, I didn't care about the money. I only cared about you. And I thought it was funny because earlier, Julie Stiles gets really mad when he asks her out to the prom for no reason. And she's like, I'm sorry, question your motives. I'm like, this is weird. Because no one's reacting normally, but she's right.
Yeah.
So anyway, the next day, Bianca and Kat, they reconcile. And by the way, this movie does pass the Bechdel test for a teenage romantic comedy.
That is good. That is good.
So their dad admits that Kat can live her own life. She's going after Sarah Lawrence, which means there's no way her relationship with Patrick is going to last in any way. But that's fine. Oh, I forgot another character I liked. The teacher.
Allison Janney?
No. The English teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think as much as I love Kat's feminism in this, he does have a great line where he's like, where she complains about Hemingway and she's like, why not Sylvia Plath? Why not some other great ladies? And he's like, yeah, so I'm so sorry about your upper middle class white girl oppression, but how about we read one thing by a black author ever? I'm like, that's a good line.
Yeah.
Anyway, so an assignment, she rewrites a sonnet and it's like 10 things she hates about him. But Michael, the 10th thing is that she doesn't hate him. Not even a little bit.
That's a good end to the poem.
Not even at all.
You don't expect that.
You don't expect it. So she's in love with Patrick. And this movie ends real quick because then she just goes out to her car and there's a guitar. And he's like, oh, some guy paid me to take out some chick. And I'm like, I'm doing the math here. And he was paid $400. And he got letters to Cleo at their prom. And he paid off a whole marching band. And he bought a guitar. That's too many things.
You know, it doesn't end quickly. This
but anyway,
podcast,
they forgive each other and they kiss and they're together.
You know, sorry. What doesn't end quickly? This podcast, because our next segment is called Bro Call.
Bring.
Hey guys, how you doing?
John, you're a brother. Have you seen this film?
Yeah, so I have watched this movie, which was clearly not a movie for me, but I didn't hate it, so that's positive. If I wouldn't have known anything about this movie, I would have picked up on the fact that it's based on a Shakespeare play, which I think is a credit to the movie. It reads and comes off like a Shakespeare tale, and the main dynamic comes off like Shakespeare. So I think, despite the fact that it's a 90s high school love drama, the fact that I could clearly pick out the beats of a Shakespeare play, well played movie, well played indeed.
By the way, if people have not read Taming of the Shrew, it is not a cute, like, mix-up movie. Like, there is some weird spousal abuse stuff. It's about, the play is about taming his willful wife into submission, which will make her happier in the end. And he, like, denies her food and traps her in a home. So it's not a cute play. I just want people to know that.
Clearly not a faithful re-adaptation then.
Right.
Okay. Less points to the movie then. So,
I mean, so a lot of the beats and the characters are still kind of the same, but just like, it's not a cute love story.
Oh, good to know. I never read it, nor was I intending to. So good to know. I think one of the things that I like least about it are our two immediate leads. I'm not there for Cameron or Bianca in any freaking way.
Michael, you and John are the same person.
Basically.
They both, every time they were on screen, they annoyed me and I wanted to be somewhere else.
Okay.
Which is a shame because I did like the nerd character whose name totally escapes me.
Michael. Yeah, the sidekick.
Yeah, the sidekick. I was there for him.
Yeah, he's funny.
I was supporting him. And honestly, I think he had the most heartfelt love story in the end, even though it kind of was a total sequel.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention that Julia Stiles has a friend who, I don't know how they're friends, who they have nothing in common, but she's like a nutter butter for Shakespeare, so they just quote Shakespeare at each other, and then at the prom they're both they're both dressed up in like silly Shakespeare clothes, and I think I said something to my friend David like, oh, they look like they're going to a dorky Ren Fest, and he's like, as opposed to a cool Ren Fest. I was like, shut up.
You're both wrong, because there's the only cool Ren Fest, and I was there for those two. They're in love, and they're the only couple that's going to make it in this movie. So, boo on you, David. I also didn't like Joey. Even I got everything about what they were doing with this character and where it was supposed to be funny and, you know, that he's a villain. I wasn't there. I got it.
I like the funny face he makes when he goes, ew, fight! It's really good.
Yeah, and the bit about like when he was doing the modeling faces, I get it was supposed to be funny, but I got where it was going the whole way, and I just wanted him to be gone. Just get over with it, man.
Agree to disagree.
What were you there for?
You know what I was there for? Heath Ledger can get it.
As in we would have sex with him.
I you know, rest in peace. I want you back. I want you back in every goddamn movie. Because Heath Ledger is the best. Julia Stiles is okay. I didn't hate her. I got their relationship, but it was because of Heath Ledger. He just was the beating heart and face of that movie. Oh God. I don't even know where to begin in describing how much I love Heath Ledger.
His body.
The body almost was secondary. He was just so charismatic in this movie.
His personality had six-pack abs.
Yeah, totally.
I think my favorite Heath Ledger part was after the song scene, or like during the song scene, but after the song when he was running away from the cops and he was like doing the high stepping. I'm like, I'm just there for you, buddy. Anything you want, I'm there. Yeah. I'm going to do it. I'm signing up for it. Which is funny because he was doing it in a funny way. And I'm like, I could totally see the Joker in that moment too. I'm just so pro Heath Ledger.
Michael and I watched a couple things from like Brokeback Mountain and The Dark Knight. And it's weird because like he's not the same person in these movies. He's
an exceptional actor.
I might have to watch Knight's Tale just on principle.
I think he might be a little better than Joseph Gordon-Levitt as an actor. Possibly.
It's possible. Oh.
Just a little bit.
It's possible. They have different professions.
Allison Janney didn't give her enough to do. Not even remotely.
Yeah.
They set up a fun character and then never used it. That was sad to me. I didn't write it down or think about it in advance, but you're right about the teacher too. That I wanted more of him because he was really funny.
Okay. John, what grade do you give it?
I'm keeping in mind that this movie is not in any way, shape, or form for me. I would give it, with that in mind, I'm going to give it a B.
Okay.
Personally, it's like a C minus, but you know, as a movie for, you know, somebody who's like you, B.
John, that was such a fair grade. Thank you so much for joining us in this podcast.
Thank you so much. That was bro call.
John, I mean, Michael, sorry. I can't tell the difference between you two. You're like twins. What grade do you give this film?
So I don't dislike this film at all. You know, I have no negative feelings, but I have no positive feelings. So that's probably like a C minus.
Wow. C minus.
I do like Heath Ledger, but it's not nearly enough for me.
That's a positive feeling. That's one positive feeling.
Yeah.
And Joey, that's two.
That's two.
Counting. Allison Janney, that's three positive feelings.
Yeah. Not strong. Go ahead. But you talk.
A minus.
Not A plus.
Because it's still very much of its time. As good as the feminism is, it's also very
It's possible that's why I just don't like this time period much.
It's also, yeah, it's funny because, like, again, I think it's like for the late 90s, it's for a major teen movie, it's very good feminism, but it's like in a way that if it was made today, it would be like Twitter would hate it. You know, it's not intersectional at all. It's, I mean, the one black character could not be more one dimensional and evil. And I love Gabrielle Union, so that's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Oh, well, like, no, there's two black characters because there's the teacher also, and he's actually great, but also pretty one-dimensional. So, yeah, that's my grade.
This
has
been
sponsored by this week.
This has been a great podcast. Who gave us this podcast for today? I'll tell you who. Hold on.
Uh-huh.
Hold on. What's a brand? What's a brand? Hold on.
Tabasco.
No.
You said name a brand.
What's a brand? Nike? I feel like we've done Nike.
What about Stray Forth?
What's that?
This is this amazing stuff I'm drinking.
Oh, sure. Do Stray Forth then.
Stray Forth, tally-ho, and all that sort of thing. When you drink this amazing Madison-based seltzer, but it's also, it'll make you drunk, which is good.
That's pretty good. I mean, that's the goal there.
Yeah, and it's low calorie if you're watching your weight. And if you live outside of Wisconsin, you can't get it. So tough luck.
Suck it. What's our next film?
Let me go through the little thinger. Pretty Woman.
Whoa, interesting choice.
So stay tuned for that trailer.
And
cut!
Welcome to Hollywood. Everybody comes to Hollywood, got a dream. What's your dream?
When I was a little girl, I would pretend I was a princess trapped in the tower, and then this knight on a white horse would come charging up and rescue me.
Could you tell me how to get to Beverly Hills?
Sure. For $5.
You can't charge me for directions.
I can do anything I want to, baby. I ain't lost.
All right, okay. You have change for 20?
For 20, I'll show you person. Wow.
Impressed?
You kidding me? I come here all the time. Well, color me happy. There's a sofa in here for two.
Close your mouth, dear.
Who is this girl here? Does she work?
She's in sales.
Touchstone Pictures presents the story of a date.
This isn't a date, it's business.
That led to a deal.
I have a business proposition for you. I'm going to be in town until Sunday. I'd like you to spend the week with me.
That's becoming a dream come true.
Time to shop. Get rid of your gum.
All right.
I don't believe you did that. You're going to be spending an obscene amount of money in here. So we're going to need a lot more help sucking up to us because that's what we really like. Oh. You understand me?
Sir, if I may say so, you're in the right store and the right city, for that matter.
They're two people who have no business being together.
Everybody is trying to land him.
Well, I'm not trying to land him. I'm just using him for sex.
Just doing a little business.
The company I'm buying this week, I'm getting for the bargain price of about $1
billion. $1 billion? Your folks must be really proud, huh?
Everything was going their way.
Well done!
Well done!
Whoop, whoop, whoop!
Until...
I don't want you to go.
You hurt me.
Yes.
Don't do it again.
Something unexpected happened.
What the hell is wrong with you this week?
You fall in love with me, but I not teach you anything?
Look, I'm not stupid, okay? I'm
I'm not in love with him.
I can find you an apartment and get you a car.
I want more. I want the fairy tale.
I think you are a very special woman. You're a dream
coming true. Touchstone Pictures presents Richard Gere.
So what happened after? He climbed up the tower and rescued her.
Julia Roberts.
She rescues him right back.
Pretty Woman.
Maybe you guys could, like, get a house together. Buy some diamonds. Oh!